Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. It is Wednesday, so that means that we will be speaking with Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Dr. Lee, welcome back to Lake 88.
It's great to be back.
And also joining us today is Danielle Labonte. Am I saying that right, Danielle?
Yep, you got it.
All right. Okay. So, and you are a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist, and we'll be talking to you about Nutrition Month, which is March. So we'll be talking to you in just a couple minutes, but welcome to the program, Danielle.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. All right. Let's start with you, Dr. Lee. And what we're hearing these days is that there are a few public health units that have seen cases of measles in their area. What is the situation in Lanark, Leeds, and Grenville?
Yeah, so we have had no measles for a very long time. So I wanted to be clear right off the bat. It's not that we have measles here. It's that we are seeing measles in Ontario in a way that we don't typically see. So there's one case that I know of in the Toronto region and another case that I know of in the London region. And both of them were associated with travel. So they were both what we call imported cases. So people who had traveled elsewhere and then gotten measles there and then come back. And so it is useful to know that. But on the other hand, it is also important to remember that we live in quite an international and interconnected world, and lots of people among us travel as well. And there is measles being seen in many parts of the world right now. And we do have a somewhat lower vaccination rate for measles across Ontario and including our region in LGL compared to previous years or our usual years, just because people have not gone around to getting their measles vaccine. The vaccine is called MMR, or one of the vaccines is called MMRV. And so we have perhaps a little bit of a more susceptible population now than we would typically have, especially among young children. And on top of that, all across the world, because of COVID-19, around the world as well, there's been a little bit less measles vaccination globally, and that all adds up to increase our risk of measles now in this stage of the world compared to what we would typically experience. So, you know, one of the things about the pandemic, I was thinking about this, is it just sort of the ripples seem to go on and on. There's all sorts of effects, and this is one of them. So what I wanted to talk about here is just the fact that there is some measles being seen across the province, that we have the possibility of greater susceptibility in our region. And although we haven't seen any measles in our region, it is possible. It's sort of something that is on my mind as a measles case and how it would affect our region and how we would respond. And so one of the things that's really important to talk about is vaccination, because like I said, there is a vaccine for measles. Young children are eligible for the vaccine. There are 3 doses in total. And it's a reminder to parents with young kids that if they're not up to date for their measles vaccine, which is called MMR or MMRV vaccine, then as a reminder, please bring them to get vaccinated.
It's one of those things that has really evolved over the years, because as you know, someone who was born in the 70s and so on, I can remember having measles, and it was more common for people to have it. However, I don't remember it being as dangerous as it is. Maybe it was just something that, you know, my parents were downplaying so I wouldn't get scared or whatever. But it's really sort of evolved over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah. So I think of measles sometimes in the way that we talk about chickenpox now, right? Which is to say that, I mean, for example, I had chickenpox as a kid. There was no chickenpox vaccine when I was a kid, but now kids are getting vaccinated for chickenpox. And the severe effects of these sorts of viral infections is not that frequent, but they do happen. So for both measles and chickenpox, they spread very, very easily. And for both of them, they used to be common viral illnesses of childhood, but now that we have a vaccine, we're able to stop the transmission of these viruses wholesale. So for most of the world, measles doesn't transmit, and for much of the world now, as more and more places adopt the chickenpox or the varicella vaccine, there's less and less transmission of that. And like you said, most kids don't have a severe outcome or a severe illness, but there are kids who do. So for measles, the way it looks is it does have a respiratory initial course. So you have, a runny nose, a cough, those sorts of things. And then you end up with a rash as well, which is sort of red and splotchy. It spreads downward through your body. And the trouble with measles is just how contagious it is. For people who have measles, if they are in a room and then they leave a room for about 2 hours afterwards, anyone who's susceptible to measles who comes into that room, even if the original person isn't there anymore, they can get measles if they're susceptible. And so it spreads so easily. And so when we have a case of measles, it really is a lot to make sure that we're preventing it for all the people who are contact of that case. And as with a lot of public health, the way to prevent it, the best way to prevent a lot of illnesses is to do the legwork beforehand. So that's the vaccination, right? So when I say, someone who has measles and then they encounter someone who's susceptible, well, vaccination will prevent that susceptibility. The measles vaccine is really, really effective. And it's about 90 something in the high 90% effective after people receive all three doses. And so it is a really good way for individual people to prevent measles for themselves, and then also for us as a community, as a society, to prevent measles transmission all across our communities.
So anyone looking for those vaccinations can contact their healthcare provider, as you said, and the health unit also providing them. All you need to do is call 1-800-660-5853. When you talk about, I guess the olden days that I was a part of now, and you mentioned chickenpox. I can remember chickenpox parties where people wanted their kids to hang out with another child who had them so that they could get it over with.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, even when I was a kid, that was a thing that was happening as well. And it was very much, like you said, getting it over with, right? Because it was so much a part of just being a kid. Everyone got chickenpox sooner or later. And now we're not in that situation anymore. One of the, I mean, chickenpox, measles, a little bit different. Chickenpox has the almost like a scorpion sting, right? Like on the other side of it, after you get chickenpox later in life, you have the risk of getting shingles. And so one of the benefits of the chickenpox vaccine is that it removes the risk of getting shingles altogether. And like measles, what I was saying about most people having as a kid, I had a rash. I was sick for a couple, I was miserable for a couple of days, and then it was over. But for some kids, especially for something like chickenpox, you can get a secondary infection that can be quite severe. The chickenpox virus itself can be quite severe, similar to measles, right? So some kids with measles, especially in parts of the world where measles is still transmitting more, you end up with kids with who are hospitalized because of it, who have lifelong effects because of it. And we don't see that. And the strength, the reason we don't see that is because of the strength of vaccination. And so that's something, you know, we're going to come to see with that, or with varicella, with chickenpox as well, which I'm really looking forward to.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Dr. Lee. Very much appreciated. And obviously this the measles situation we'll be watching very closely, especially as March break is almost upon us and people will be traveling, and those are those traveling
Absolutely.
cases that you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
and it's really interesting because we'll have more people traveling this year than we did last year, and people are more susceptible, I guess. We've talked about this before, to illnesses and so on, because we kept ourselves away from everybody for so long. So really, we could see a bump in all sorts of different viruses. Boy, that'll be fun after after the March break.
Yes, the ripples of the pandemic, they seem to never end.
Yeah.
But it does remind me to plug, if you are traveling over March break, for example, or you're anticipating some travel later in the year, and you yourself, or you know your kids are not up to date for vaccinations, please consider getting vaccinated. Go to your health care provider and talk about this, as well as contacting our clinic at the health unit, because there's all sorts of things that we can prevent through vaccination, and not have it happen to you, when you're traveling, and then also for people coming back to not then bring something back for our communities at home.
Okay. Again, thank you, Dr. Lee. Now you're going to hang in for the second part of this conversation here. Danielle Labonte, we will bring you into this. You are, of course, a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist. And we are shifting gears here, of course. March is Nutrition Month, and this year's theme is Unlock the Potential of Food, Find a Dietitian. So we're going to be talking about finding a dietitian and why that is important. And in 2 weeks, the public health dietitians will be here to talk about their roles in the community. So we're looking forward to that. Let's get started today, though. And maybe, Danielle, you could tell us what exactly a registered dietitian is.
Yeah, sure. So registered dietitians give credible information and encourage food choices that promote health and prevent chronic disease. And dietitians are committed to evidence-based practice. So when they make a recommendation, we really are basing that on the best available scientific evidence at that time.
So, what's the difference between a registered dietitian and a nutritionist? Because I'll plead guilty to this one. I thought they were basically synonyms.
Yeah, so in some areas they are. In Ontario, anyone really can call themselves a nutritionist. You don't need any specific credentials to use that title. But the title of dietitian is protected by law, just like nurses, pharmacists, or physicians. And only members of the College of Dietitians of Ontario can call themselves registered dietitians and use that RD acronym after their name in Ontario. I should also mention that public health nutritionists are kind of different than just anyone calling themselves a nutritionist, in that we are registered dietitians. It just means that we have a master's degree.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. And I had a feeling that if you're associated with the health unit, you've got some pretty adequate credentials. So you didn't let us down. So how can someone become a registered dietitian?
Yeah, so to become a dietitian in Ontario, we must complete a 4-year degree in nutrition, a dietetic internship through an accredited program. Then we have to pass our Canadian dietetic registration exam, and that's in all provinces except for Quebec. And then we commit to an annual practice review as well.
Okay, so where do dietitians work then?
Yeah, we really do work in a variety of settings. Some of those include clinical settings, so you'd find us in hospitals, doctor's offices, long-term care, home care, in the community at, community health centers, family health teams, private practice, food service work, in sports, academia, research, business and media, and then of course public health and other government offices.
It's so cool when you think about it, because when you're looking at the particular foods that you need to have for different settings, whether it be a medical condition that you have or an athlete, right? Like it that's a pretty broad scope. So it must involve a lot of experience too as you go through this, Danielle.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I would say it is a broad scope. We cover lots of different areas, and then we all kind of become experts in the areas that we work in. So, I feel very comfortable in public health. I'm probably not going to be doing clinical nutrition work anytime soon. I would need some refreshers.
No, that's great. And we're glad you're in public health because you get to speak with us. Now, Dr. Lee, can you tell us why nutrition, I think I know the answer to this or part of it anyway, but why nutrition is part of public health?
Well, I have to say that, I think the way that we think about nutrition, right? Like, so food is so much a part of culture and enjoyment and having, not just an absence of illness, which food is part of, so I'll get to that, but also just getting the fullest experience and joy in living life. I think food is so much a part of that in all sorts of cultures, in all sorts of contexts, eating around the dinner table with friends and family, going out for a treat, having pleasurable foods such as ice cream, for example, and then also having foods that you think, oh, maybe this is an adventurous day. I'll try a food that I've never tried before. So much of sort of the variety of life is related to food, and so I think that's a really important part of what I think of as part of health and the work of public health is getting the most out of our lives in terms of health. And then the other part of food is its relationship with, preventing disease. So much of preventing disease has to do with eating a healthy diet, diet full of nutrition, diet that, isn't too many calories or processed food or ways in which we can have food affect the risk of illnesses such as diabetes, heart disease. So food is so much a part of that. And then I think as well, the way that people think about food can be really different. People's relationship with food, emotionally and mentally, how much they know about food, what we call food literacy, that can vary a lot and can vary over a lifetime. And the last thing that I'll point out is just around cooking and people's ability or, literacy in cooking, in knowing how to cook delicious food, how to arrange for something like a dinner party or having friends. So much of that has to do with our cultures, the way that we were brought up. And so I think food has so many different facets, and so much of it affects health. And so that's part of the work of public health.
All right. Now, Danielle, what if somebody listening to this right now would like to speak to a nutritionist looking for counseling for a specific health condition, or perhaps wants a dietitian to come and give them a talk on nutrition and health? How do they go about doing that?
Yeah, for sure. So, health unit dietitians, us at the health unit, we don't offer that type of service. We do not offer one-on-one nutrition counseling or typically do presentations to the public. If we are asked for this type of service, we refer on to a community dietitian, which, we do have several of them in our communities here. And if someone is looking for a dietitian on their own, they can visit our health unit website and type registered dietitian service directory into the search bar. That will bring them to a page where they can see all the different dietitians in Leeds, Granville, Lanark. They can also go to dietitians.ca and click on Find a Dietitian, and that will just show a variety of dietitians that have registered on the Dietitians of Canada website, and they would offer counseling generally.
Couple more questions for you, Danielle. Thank you for that. But a couple more questions for you. Number one, I'm just kind of curious here. How long have you been doing this?
I have been at the health unit for about 6.5 years.
Okay, that wasn't really my question. My question is, what is your favorite food or type of food?
My favorite food or type of food? It's a hard one. I thought about this a lot. And I like a lot of different foods, but I would say some of my favorite foods are taco salad, like a really good sandwich, shepherd's pie, and mac and cheese. Those are
Wow.
probably like my top four.
You hit a couple of mine there too. Like, I mean, I love a really good sandwich and the taco salad is awesome. Dr. Lee, I have to ask you the same question.
Oh, let me think. Well, so, I was talking about family and food memories. So my mom makes this really delicious, like preserved mustard pork belly dish. That takes her all day. I've never learned how to make it because it sounds like too much work, and she can just make it for me. So that's like my top of like my favorite things in the world to eat. And for things that I know how to make for myself, chili, ice cream. I don't make the ice cream. I buy the ice cream. A really good salad. It like sometimes really hits the spot. Yeah, that's
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, I have a salad every day. I really do. Okay, and Danielle, the last question that I have for you, and this is probably the most important question that you are ever going to be asked in your career, okay? All right, here we go. How do I get my 3-year-old to eat vegetables?
Oh boy. Well, I will admit, I am not the dietitian that covers 0 to 6 FL unit, my colleague does.
There's no
But
answer.
lots of exposure, lots of exposure, lots of opportunities, a positive role modeling, and trying them in different ways, adding sauces, cooking them in different ways, different seasonings, things like that. But really, it can take up to 15 exposures for a child to even come around to trying a food. So.
Doesn't work.
And sometimes they just might not like certain things, and I guess that's
There you
okay
go. There you go. It's true. Thank goodness they make other things like cookies that have vegetables in them. I don't know how they do it, but I'm glad they do.
Oh, yes, a good zucchini bread.
You're right.
Delicious.
Oh,
Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely. Absolutely. And if you put a bunch of, chocolate spread on it, he'll eat it. I tell you.
Yeah, it's still a vegetable.
Yeah. He's getting it, right? No, this is awesome. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. If people want to get more information, you can visit the Health Unit website at healthunit.org. They're also on Facebook and Twitter, and you can call 1-800-660-5853. And we invite you once again to listen to the program on March 15th when we give an overview of the services public health provides with respect to nutrition. Danielle, will you be back with us then?
Yes, I'll be back, and my colleague Summon will also be with me. So we'll both speak to the work we do.
Awesome. That's great. We look forward to that. And more ideas on how to get my 3-year-old to eat vegetables would be appreciated. That'll actually be the bulk of the show. No, I'm kidding. much appreciated. And Dr. Lee, as always, thank you so much for taking the time every week to speak to us and our listeners here. We really appreciate that.
It's always so much fun.
All right. Danielle, thank you too. And we will talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks so much.
I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening to In Focus today. If you want to catch up on this program or maybe listen to some previous editions, just go to lanarkleadstoday.ca. This edition will be published shortly. And then, of course, you can catch them all right there. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful afternoon.